Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Winnie Chen, and with my colleague David Rabinowitz, we're here to talk about a really exciting innovation that's been emerging in the social and health spheres in the last few years. Before I begin, though, just wanted to say that we have no relationships to disclose, and I wanted to just give you a quick peek into the next 10 minutes or so. So David and I are going to describe a rapidly growing funding innovation and explain its application to public health, and we're also going to explain some current trends and opportunities for public health agencies. So this graphic is new to everyone, and I know that because we just created it last week. But the process itself, it may be very familiar to all of you. This is essentially a process map for how government delivers social and health services. In a traditional way of delivering services, the government, what we have listed as payer, usually issues an RFP or an FOA. And what they're doing is putting out a grant, a contract or a grant that sort of lists, sort of prescribes sets of services or activities that they want to have delivered to a target population in order to meet some sort of need. And in the traditional way of delivering services, service providers, contractors, grantees, they bid on the contract and they bid on the opportunity to deliver these services to the target population. It's a pretty streamlined, straightforward model, and it's pretty effective about getting services out the door. But there are some problems. There are a lot of problems. And I think anybody who has actually engaged in any of this, either at the payer level or the contractor level, or even at the target population, they can probably add a few more X's on the side. And I'm not going to read through all the challenges that are listed on the right side, but I wanted to highlight a few. So one of the fundamental challenges of the traditional service delivery model is that governments are really paying for inputs and not for outcomes. They're paying for these prescribed sets of services and activities, and they don't really always know whether those services and activities lead to the outcomes that they're looking to achieve. They don't know if they're meeting the needs of the populations that they're trying to serve. And that makes it really difficult to know which kinds of programs are actually working, which almost makes it impossible to scale effective programs. And this is a much bigger problem given the context that Ms. Hill just talked about, which is that local health departments and governments are increasingly under financial and budgetary constraints. So there's a lot of pressure now to cut programs that don't work, but you don't really know what's working and what's not. So this is actually what social impact bonds are all about. It's about delivering services, but also trying to navigate or address all these problems that you see on the right-hand side. This is the process map of a social impact bond. Before I go any further, I just wanted to see how many of you are familiar with social impact bonds or pay for success? Okay, that's actually a pretty good number because it is a new innovation. I'll give you a kind of quick explanation. So what social impact bonds really does is it flips the traditional contracting process on its head. Instead of paying for inputs, we're really looking to pay for outcomes. So in a social impact bond, the payer, usually the government, identifies an outcome that it wants to see achieved, and then it names a price that it's willing to pay to achieve that outcome. And then contractors, what we have is external organizations, then bid on the opportunity to achieve that outcome. If that external organization is able to achieve that outcome, then the payer actually pays them. But if it doesn't, then the external organization gets nothing. The payer doesn't lose a dime. And that's a pretty straightforward, simple kind of explanation. Actually, in practice, it's much more complicated because, you know, you need an evaluator to set these kinds of outcome measures. Usually, we need investors to provide the working capital for the external organizations to actually deliver the services and interventions. And oftentimes, the external organizations aren't in the business of providing services, so they subcontract with service providers. Let's give you one specific example. In Fresno, California, the California Endowment is serving as a payer right now, and it has identified asthma management as a major concern in the area because I think 20% of children in Fresno suffer from asthma. So the California Endowment said, we want to reduce the amount of costs that are coming from giving emergency treatment to children with asthma, and we also want to improve the health of children in the area, especially in low-income areas. And so two organizations, Social Finance and Collective Health, or I think it's Collective Health, well, two external organizations have bid on the opportunity to deliver on those outcomes. And they have subcontracted three service providers in California to deliver asthma management interventions to 200 children in Fresno. And the project is wrapping up now, but if they're able to achieve that outcome, then the California Endowment would probably pay, in a normal situation, would pay Social Finance and its partner, who would then pay their investors and then their service providers for delivering all those services. And if it doesn't achieve that outcome, then the California Endowment wouldn't pay. I should say that this is actually a demonstration project, so it's not like a real SIB. There's not actually real money, but they want to prove that the concept works. I mentioned earlier, social impact bonds are actually really rapidly growing. So six states already have social impact bond projects in place, including the asthma management demonstration project in California. And there's dozens more states that are now in the process of planning their own projects. And to talk a little bit more about the actual applications of SIBs in their localities, I'm going to hand it over to David to talk about it.
Thanks, Wendy. So as Wendy just explained, this is the brief kind of recap of what a social impact bond, also called pay for success, really is. So it's an innovative tool that brings new capital to effective solutions and enables leaders to funnel their dollars to programs that have an actual impact. So a couple of points to highlight. This new capital, and this is, again, back to Renee's earlier point, It originally started coming from foundations. The Rockefeller Foundation and some others were behind the first couple of deals. But then it started to move into the private sector. So some large investment banks were bringing their investment portfolios from some of their high net worth individuals and applying that as the working capital to some of the early deals. And we're seeing that trend continue to extend into a broader pool of investors, which offers kind of new opportunities for capital to fund these social programs that we're talking about. And then secondly, on the point around the real measurable impact. So with the onus on achieving an outcome, it lets you do fewer programs that don't work. So take the Scared Straight example, right, which we know has evidence of not working and actually causing harm. And this is a way to get away from doing things like that and more towards things that we know have evidence of their effectiveness, like the Nurse Family Partnership, for example, which is a very well-reviewed and analyzed program that is actually now in talks with another foundation to start a social impact bond in the Northeast. So when are they most effective? So they can't work for everything, but there are a number of topics that they can address. They're most effective when the outcome can generate actual savings. So we see this in a couple of ways. So obviously there's the cashable savings, the actual money that the government saves can be used for other purposes. But also thinking about what is the kind of community benefit, the individual benefit that we care about and we want to save from that perspective as well. Secondly, that the outcomes are observable and measurable. This is important so we know when the payment would get triggered. There's transparency in all parties involved that success happened or on the flip side if it didn't happen. Third, that there's effective evidence of effective interventions, and not only kind of evidence that the program works, but at a level of rigor enough that investors feel comfortable kind of putting their money at risk. So in order to bring the investors to the table who are providing the working capital to make the program run before the payment is triggered, making sure there's enough evidence to give them that confidence. We also see them most effective when there's few negative consequences if it doesn't work. So both on the kind of public relations risk to the government, we don't want this to be a situation where there's kind of a public backlash if something is unsuccessful and the payer, the funder or the government needs to be comfortable with that level of risk. And also to make sure that we're avoiding kind of perverse incentives. So with this kind of additional payout opportunity, making sure that the programs are designed such that we avoid kind of perverse incentives. And finally, that the external organization is able to actually influence the outcome. So there are some examples, take joblessness as one, where there's such a kind of macroeconomic context that has to be addressed for that type of program to be successful that might not be the right subject matter for a SIB or for a pay-for-success deal to tackle. So that's when they're most effective. And regardless of that, there are some limitations that we encourage you all to kind of think about if deciding if a social impact bond is kind of right for your organization or something that you can help champion. They're 3 to 8 years in length, which can be longer than traditional programs, and that has some complexities for how do you kind of manage that working capital in the meantime. We've talked a lot about the importance of having observable outcomes. I think the key here is that it's essential to be transparent on the methodology, right, so that the investor, the service provider, the external organization, the payer all agree kind of on the rigor needed to prove success or lack of. There's a termination risk, so just like with any program that's kind of easy to stop, if the service providers and the organizations think it's not going to work, it's not happening, they just might end their services early, which has obviously implications for the target population that we're seeking to benefit. And finally, and most importantly, there's a higher degree of kind of startup and initial operating costs to get these deals off the ground. As Wendy was talking about with the map, there's a couple underway, there's a lot more planned, but it's pretty new. I mean, In the 5 or 6 years since it first started in the UK, there have been a number of kind of guidebooks and examples to bring to bear, but there's nothing as robust as kind of a traditional contract mechanism that we can just kind of give to an organization and they can run with without needing some kind of external technical assistance and support. Again, this is new. Everyone's kind of figuring out a little bit in flight. So what does this mean for public health and for us? The graph at the top is some smart first steps to think about when deciding if a social impact bond is something that your organization could take on. A couple of the key points, so thinking more broadly around prevention interventions where a SIB could be deployed. We talked about a few health examples. There's a large number of criminal justice examples around reducing recidivism rates. There aren't that many other kind of public health, population health examples yet, so still thinking about what are the other kind of prevention interventions that could be a subject for a deal like this. Making sure that funding is flexible enough, setting those outcomes that we've talked a lot about, working with organizations who are open to change and innovation and trying new things. And then finally, that point at the top right, thinking about not only deploying SIBs, but what's kind of the essence of these concepts that you can put into practice across your organization today. That's what's on the bottom of the page. And a couple of key points to highlight. So funding, there are ways to start to influence kind of bonus payments or other mechanisms that incent change that can be added to existing contracts and grants. From a planning and management perspective, SIBs are all about aligning incentives and getting the stakeholders on the same page about the outcome that they want to achieve, and there's ways to incorporate that into ongoing programs that you're running today. Performance and evaluation, we saw some metrics in the earlier presentations. SIBs really only need kind of the minimum data required to say if it's successful or not and to make sure that it's working and moving in the right direction. So this has implications for the ability to kind of reduce the number of measures that grantees or the contractors are asked to collect and really focus on what's most important and what's going to really drive better decision making. And then using that evaluative outputs to drive future performance improvement practices. And then finally, outcomes. And if you take away one thing from this, I think this is key. In the midst of the transformational change that everyone has touched on, driven by ACA and others, as the broader health system is shifting from volume, from fee-for-service to value-based payments, public health agencies, population health practices are being pushed to really demonstrate an improvement and an actual impact. And while a SIB is one way to achieve this, I think the concepts that we've talked about today, as you think about other ways to really improve population health outcomes, this is one way to think about that and to put it into practice in your organization. So I know I'm out of time. With that, thank you. Thank you for your attention. I also want to thank the team at Monitor Deloitte, who's been working on this for the past couple of years. Thank you.